I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short. Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. April Gallup was a top-secret military specialist working in the Pentagon on September 11, 2001. Her experiences that day are in sharp contrast to what the government has said happened. Gallup was briefed by officials not to tell her story in public. She also received an email from a Fox News reporter who had been told by the Pentagon not to interview her. She is currently suing Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and General Myers. The case was heard in New Haven, Connecticut, at the federal courthouse on Tuesday, April 5, 2011. Unfortunately, but predictably, the corporate media did not cover this event. Today, April Gallup's lawyer, Bill Veal, joins me on the show to discuss the case. So, Bill Veal, welcome to the show.
How are you doing?
Good. Would you just tell us a little bit about your background and your website, Center for 9/11 Justice?
My background, I was a public defender for 31 years in Contra Costa County in California. It's a county across the bay from San Francisco. And I retired after 13 years as the head of the alternate defender office, which is one of the branches of the public defender's office. So I was basically a criminal trial lawyer on the public end for a long time. And then I started the Center for 9/11 Justice after couple of years of studying into this business here and decided that there needed to be something done from a legal end since nothing else seemed to be working and there hadn't been anything particularly done in the legal realm. So we, a couple of us, put together the website and we ended up filing a lawsuit with April Gallup as our plaintiff against Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Myers for conspiring to facilitate the attacks on 9/11.
So you're working with April, and can you tell the listeners a little bit about her background and why she's filing this lawsuit?
Yes, she was a soldier. She was a seven-year veteran at that point, specialist for the Army, and she was assigned to the Pentagon, and she'd been there about a year or so and was just coming back from maternity leave on the 11th of September. She was told to come in and do a quick job before she took her baby to daycare, and she walked into the Pentagon. She's got a top secret security clearance for the Army, and it's a great privilege to work at the Pentagon. And so she was a soldier, and she went in and sat down to do whatever her job was and started up her computer, and then there was an explosion, and the place blew up. She suffered a head injury and was knocked unconscious for some period of time. She awoke and saw just this rubble. The place had been destroyed in a significant measure, and then she got up and managed to find her child after a number of different efforts she couldn't really find. It was a lot of dust and smoke and things like that. And then she heard crying, and she finally reached down and she grabbed her little baby into her arms. And she and I think there were 13 or so other people managed to get out of there. They saved a number of people, and there were other people they simply could not save. She got out onto the lawn. Her baby was taken from her, and she collapsed and basically awoke more or less in the hospital.
And are any of the 13 others speaking out that were there?
No, I think she's pretty much by herself.
Okay. And did her child and she both have injuries that they still suffer from today? Or?
Yes, absolutely. It's very difficult to get a banging on your head like that. But she's recovered very well, not perfectly, but very well. And her child is doing very well at this point, now age almost 10. So it's a very difficult road, and she's been working really hard and has done very well, but it's been extremely, extremely difficult in terms of living a life under these circumstances.
Now tell us, when did you file the lawsuit against Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Myers?
Yeah, it was filed on the 15th of December of 2008.
Maybe you could just kind of tell us what's happened since then.
Sure. We filed the lawsuit with a complaint that alleged the conspiracy to commit terrorist acts, basically, and attempted murder. And we filed that, and the government, the United States Attorney's Office, took over representation of the three defendants, and they said that they were going to file a motion to dismiss. And they did that, and they alleged a number of different things, but the primary, as it turned out, the primary argument they made was simply this allegation that these three men would get together and conspire to commit this act, which resulted in the deaths of 3,000 Americans, is simply implausible. And Judge Denny Chin, who is the district court judge to whom the case was assigned, found in their favor and decided that the case was frivolous, which means there's no factual or legal basis for it, and in writing his decision said it was the product of cynical delusion and fantasy, and the idea that these men could have done this is simply implausible, that in spite of all the evidence which we put into the complaint. Significantly, when he wrote his decision, he left out basically most of what we had concluded in there and said nothing about what the three defendants were doing and saying and at the time of the crime, which was crucial, and didn't mention any of their lies about those matters. And specifically in the case of Cheney, he was actually known to have been giving orders or affirming orders about the airplane that either hit or didn't hit the Pentagon. And so we have him actually doing something with regard to an instrumentality of the crime. Judge Chin found that that was not worthy of mention either. So it's bizarre in the extreme that he wrote a decision that he did write, finding that the suggestions were implausible, but there we have it. So we then appealed that order dismissing the case to the Second Circuit, the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. And last Tuesday we had the argument in New Haven, Connecticut concerning that. 5 days before, which is traditional and the way it's done, we learned who was impaneled to hear that case. And one of the judges who was picked to be on the panel was Judge John Walker, who is the first cousin of former President George Bush. And in addition to that, first president of Marvin Bush, who we actually write about in our affidavits in support of the response to the motion to dismiss. And he's a cousin or brother, actually, I don't even know which he is, either cousin or brother of a work walker who's also referred to in our papers. So you had a judge who was connected to the administration by his first cousin being the person who chose the men that we were accusing, and then a cousin of actually two people who were involved in being in a position so that they could have actually created the conditions that allowed the World Trade Center to be infiltrated with explosives.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit more, what their positions were?
Sure. The World Trade Center was, there was a security company which was in charge of security for the World Trade Center, and it was changed names, but it was basically Securicom or Stratasec. And for the period of 1999 to 2000, Marvin Bush was actually director of that corporation. And then from 2000 on to 2003, his cousin or whatever is Work Walker, and he was a director, if not the CEO, I think he was the CEO of that company at the time of the actual event, 9/11/2001. And our notion is that in order to bring down the World Trade Center, you would have had to have a lot of time spent there lacing it, basically painting it with explosive nanothermite we found, or people have found, in the dust of the rubble. This is a substance which can cut through steel instantaneously and creates enormously high temperatures. So we know what the mechanism was, or at least part of the mechanism for the bringing down of the World Trade Center. And so somehow or another it had to have been gotten into that building. It's an enormous project to bring down a building through controlled demolition, especially one as large as those, two 110-story buildings. So whoever was running security for those buildings would likely have been in a position, clearly, to have allowed that to happen, or if they did not allow it to happen consciously, they were in a position to be subverted in some way or another. So they are in a position to know where the problems were, who maybe wasn't paying attention, or who actually was contracted to do the work. So anyway, the security for the World Trade Center is a very important part of this piece here, and they happen to have been, these two Bush cousins or family members happen to be positioned to have an effect in that regard. So
then you get to court, and there's John Walker, Bush's other cousin, as the judge. That's
right.
Really
so,
interesting.
I made a motion to disqualify him for the reasons I said. Number one, that it simply looks terrible. that you're coming here, and a cousin of the president who hired the people that we are accusing, who is therefore ultimately responsible for their actions, would be sitting in judgment. But also he's personally affected that his name is going to be, as they say, dragged through the mud by this lawsuit if it goes ahead. So, you know, I thought it was totally inappropriate for them to have picked him. But he did not recuse himself, which is what normally would have happened in a case like that. And very significantly, the other two judges did nothing about it either. In fact, so when I reminded the court that there was this motion pending to disqualify one of the judges, Judge Winter said, yes, that motion would be denied. And then I asked for a continuance so that I could seek appellate review of that ruling, and that motion was denied as well. So we were left to argue the case at that point, and which I did. So,
what was it like in court arguing the case?
Well, as a trial lawyer, it's a fantastic experience to put yourself there and to be, you know, questioned about a case that you were, you know, totally familiar with and totally committed to. Interestingly, it was as if I was there at a bull session in college, with all due respect to the court. They didn't ask me about any of the legal mechanisms that the court used below, Judge Chin used, to dismiss the case. They weren't seemed particularly interested in that. They were asking me questions that, you know, a layperson might ask about this suit. Well, gee whiz, what happened to this other plane if Flight 77 didn't hit the Pentagon? To which I replied, how should I know? I don't have subpoena power here. You're trying to deny me that, basically. I didn't say all that, but I implied it. You know, how can you expect me to know what happened to this plane, which is the key to the entire case, when this case hasn't gone forward? They also wanted to know if I was licensed to practice before the Second Circuit. I mean, things like that.
Was that a ridiculous question?
Well, it's absurd. You know, I mean, it's never asked of a lawyer. Somebody finds out that there's somebody's practice before them that they shouldn't have, and it's usually the other side who checks into these kinds of things, then action is taken before a bar association or something like that. But I would love to know if they've ever asked another lawyer who's appeared before them if he was or she was licensed to practice before them. It's a very demeaning comment. It's, you know,
sure, it sounds it.
Yeah.
And were there supporters there at court for April? And
I think there were maybe 10 or 15, something like that.
Okay, great.
It was very nice to have people there to support us.
And did you get any of the major media, the corporate media, covering the trial?
You've got to be kidding. I have done everything I could do. I mean, I have a list of all the major names in corporate media in this country to whom I have sent letters and requests for interviews and to show them documents, to, you know, have them look into things. And it's almost uniform that they ignore whatever I bring before them. And there are a number of instances, 2, 3 maybe, where I've actually gotten to a person who has either written a book, in the case of Philip Sheehan, who wrote the commission about the 9/11 commission, and Jim Dwyer of the New York Times. We actually had a colloquy on the phone and then an email exchange over a period of, you know, 10 or so days back in 2006, I think. So there was, you know, a couple of instances where people were actually exchanging ideas. Matt Taibbi, for example, who was somebody who, you know, I put some questions before him, and he kind of laughingly didn't answer most of them. So he'd been occasions. But
Matt Taibbi comes out against the 9/11 truth movement.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. No, no. He's very vocal about it and, you know, just laughs at what I have to say. But at the same time, he doesn't answer particular questions, which is what we need. We need to have somebody there who is responsible and is made to answer a question. And that's simply what has not happened in the corporate media, period.
And so can you maybe talk about some other evidence that you're basing the case on?
Well, that's hard because it's so big. I've never seen or heard of any case that had as much evidence as this does. As I said before, I personify the truth movement, but that's what I will do as I talk here. We have found nanothermite in the dust. Stephen Jones is the physicist who has studied and done. He and Niels Harrit from the University of Copenhagen have analyzed samples of dust, at least 4 separate, independently collected samples of dust from Ground Zero, and found this chemical, which is called nanothermite, and there is no reason for it to have been there. There's only one reason why it could possibly have been there, and that is that it was part of the explosive controlled demolition. There were instances, many, many instances of, just talking physical evidence here, of people finding and seeing molten metal at Ground Zero, where it was clearly not aluminum. In order to have molten metal there, there have to have been temperatures of, 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, there's no explanation for temperatures of 2,700 degrees Fahrenheit other than controlled demolition, because a plane and kerosene blowing up or whatever does not produce that kind of temperature. These are simple chemical notions here. We've got Dick Cheney, literally being Norman Mineta, who was the Secretary of Transportation at the time, was called over to the White House and went down into the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, the bunker down there, and found Cheney there at 9:15 and 9:20. It's significant that Cheney denies that he was there at that time, but Mineta, a cabinet secretary, he was a winner of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and he's got an airport named after him in San Jose, California. This is a witness that trial lawyers will wait their lives to be able to claim, says that he was there and basically giving orders to a young man who came in and informed him of the progress of this plane that was heading toward the Pentagon or the White House at that point. Nobody knew which, but it was basically heading right for the Pentagon, telling him it's 50 miles out, it's 30 miles out, and come in. And so when he said it's 10 miles out, he says to Cheney. Cheney whips his neck around, as Mineta says, and says, and he's asking the guy, Cheney, do the orders still stand, sir? And Cheney says, yes, of course they still stand. Have you heard something to the contrary? And then a minute or so later, the Pentagon blows up. So Cheney's in a position now where he, under oath, to have to explain, well, what exactly was that order, Vice President Cheney? If it was to shoot the plane down, which you apparently talk about, yes, you've made the decision that you're going to shoot these planes down. If that was the order, then we've got 200 and some years of history that explain what would happen then. Because when an order is given in the military and it's not carried out, then there are boards of inquiry, there are investigation, there are courts martial. And you find out, well, why didn't this happen, so that we can't have this problem again? We won't have this problem again, but we're going to fix it because we're going to fix responsibility for its failure. Well, what happened in 9/11? There was never any board of inquiry, period, in the military. And every single one of the participants, the major participants, were promoted, much less courts martial. They were promoted. So you know that what happened there was the orders that were given were carried out properly. Because you know if they weren't carried out properly, these people would bring in their, with subpoena power, they would bring out their witnesses to say, no, I did the job right. I did exactly what you told me to do. So then based upon that simple bit of logic, that the order was, don't touch that plane.
Right.
So if Dick Cheney is giving an order that says, don't touch that plane, he's saying, leave that instrumentality of this crime alone so that it can do its disastrous work, whatever it was. Now, we say that that plane did not hit the Pentagon because it was too high above the Pentagon, too close to the Pentagon, and could not have dove and then straightened out, leveled off, and flown into that building, as the pictures which have been released suggest. It simply couldn't have done that. If it tried to do that, it would have blown, the wings would have come off, and it would have crashed into the ground. So we know, we believe, based upon the evidence that we have, now it's not evidence that's been tested yet at this point, that's what we've gotten from the official sources, though, and we've analyzed it, we've had people analyze it, who were pilots, and analyzed the radar tracks, And we've analyzed the black box that they gave us the information from. And we've analyzed it and said, okay, that plane simply could not have hit that building, so it must have flown over the building. But there is a picture that had been released by the Pentagon, which is a couple of frames of something, which looks like a flying object going into the building. So there could well have been two planes, one a missile, one a plane, or some kind of retrofitted plane into a missile, that created the damage, or there were explosions in the building at the same time. This is a very elaborate operation here. There's no question about that. And we know that there's a radar track which suggests that the plane actually ended at the Pentagon. So, some of the people who were analyzing this looked at that very carefully and said, oh my goodness, is it in fact true that this plane hit the Pentagon? But then they looked at the radar tracks beyond where the plane would have gone and saw that there was nothing there. But then they looked, and they looked very closely, and they saw that the ground clutter, which is, you know, buildings, tall buildings, the Washington Monument, the tall buildings in Alexandria or Roslyn, Virginia, they were no longer there after the plane hit the Pentagon. They had taken out the buildings. So it looks like they erased the radar tracks. And we know that they erased the radar tracks because there was, in fact, something called the E-4B or the Flying Pentagon or the Doomsday Plane seen, filmed by CNN. There was a piece done in CNN in 2007 about this. There was that plane was actually over the White House at the time of the attacks. And there are pictures of it, and it's been analyzed, and there's no doubt about that, that there was an E-4B there. So when we looked at the radar tracks from that were given, you know, provided by the Rades 84 Rades battalion in Idaho, I think, or maybe Omaha, I can't remember which. Anyway, we looked for that plane too, and it's not there. And that would have been the mechanism for coordinating these attacks, this Doomsday plane, which is the Flying Pentagon, basically. So we've got an enormous amount of evidence. I haven't even touched half of it. So, but those are some of the highlights, you know, that we're going to be looking at.
Okay. And now the case was denied in the court in New York, the federal court, by Judge Chin. And then you went to New Haven, and you're waiting now for their decision?
That's right.
Okay. And if they deny it there, where will you go from there?
Well, when a panel of the Second Circuit makes its decision, the litigants have an opportunity, the ones who are unsatisfied with the decision, to then seek what they call an en banc or en banc review, which is you make a petition to the entire court. There's some 20 judges or whatever. You can petition them to rehear the case if you're unsatisfied with the job that the three judges did. And so if we get a ruling that is not what we're looking for, then we will petition the whole court to see if we can overturn that rule.
I see. And then if that failed, then what?
Then you're left with the Supreme Court, yeah.
I see. Okay. And I understand reading that, I don't know if you're familiar with Ellen Mariani, who is...
Yes, I know who that is. I'm not completely familiar with her case. I did talk to her lawyer when he was there, though.
Yeah. Wait, I thought it was really strange that in the same day in New Haven, they had both April Gallup's case and Ellen Mariani's. I thought that was really unusual. Is that, and I'm not a lawyer, but that just seems strange to me.
Well, there are certainly instances where judges categorize cases and they go, oh, well, let's do that on the same day so that we can deal with these issues on the same day. We have all our law clerks dealing with certain issues all at the same time. Certain sense of efficiency to that, not much in my opinion, but some. But this was a motion by the defendants in that case to dismiss the appeal, which had been filed. And if the allegations are not the same as ours by any means, they're filed, I think, against the airlines or the insurance companies or something like that. I'm really not sure about it. But she was a widow of a 9/11 victim, and so she'd filed suit against, I'm not sure who it was. And so they put it on that day for argument on a motion to dismiss the appeal. So that argument went sometime before ours.
And how can people help you in April in your work in this case? Is there a way that people can help you?
Sure. The Center for 9/11 Justice is Center for 911911justice.org. We have a website, and papers in the case have all been logged there and posted there. We've got a couple of, you know, a press release or something like that, and some description of what we're doing. And so we file our papers there, and if people are interested, at some point or another, you know, I'll be honest, we don't need a lot of money right now. We could use some, because there's flying back and forth to New York from California, which is where I live and where Dennis Cunningham lives, who is the lawyer who's done most of the writing in the case, is Dennis Cunningham. He's a fabulous trial lawyer and civil rights lawyer. And so he's done a lot of the writing, and we've posted the matters there. But there is travel, a small amount of travel at this point, but we're looking to that time when we're going to have subpoena power if we get lucky and get finally some decent decisions in this case. But one of the things that's going to turn that around is if people start to get active here. And so what we're asking for is for whatever donations that could come to the website, we've got a PayPal account there, we're going to start looking at the possibility of a more thoroughgoing and comprehensive public relations kind of effort here to enhance our legal strategy. at some point or another, if we get successful, we're going to need tons of money, tons of money. This would be a case that is going to just defy every financial element that there is in the world. I mean, it's going to be so big. And I think people are going to want to contribute to that. So I think that when we do get discovery in this case, that people will step up and provide us with resources. But we're going to have to do the case as we have resources to do it. But I think at that point, we'll really need a lot of money. But right now, we could use, you know, maybe lesser amounts of money, but we don't have anything. So we can use whatever anybody can give us to begin this public relations effort so that people can start to know. When we released our press release in the last week or so, we actually did get some press, and people are responding. And it's really wonderful to see this, you know, to see an envelope with $5 in it. It makes you feel great that people just want to contribute to something where they're looking for the possibility of justice in this case. And right. We are hoping to try to give that to people.
Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners before we pause?
Well, people could think, just take a second to think about April Gallup. This is one of the most courageous women I've ever met. She was in a building that was blown up, supposedly by a 757, flying 530 miles an hour, that disappeared into a hole in the Pentagon that isn't anywhere near big enough, in my opinion. But no matter how you slice it, if that plane did get in there to her, to where she was, it wasn't there when she walked out 10 minutes later, 5 minutes later, however many minutes later. It wasn't there. So how did it disappear? Well, the answer that you hear from official story purveyors is that, it was vaporized. The heat was so great that it vaporized, and that's why we don't see anything left over. There are a number of things that need to be said about it. First of all, how did she survive that heat? She was 40 feet away from the edge of the hole when she walked out. She walked out through that hole that was created by this thing going 530 miles an hour that evaporated. So you just think about that for a second. This is an enormously courageous woman whose very existence defies the story that the government is trying to tell and that these three individuals are trying to tell.
All right, Bill. Well, then, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. I appreciate it.
Good luck with the trial.
You bet. Thanks.
That was an interview with attorney Bill Veal discussing his client April Gallup's case against Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and General Myers. An appeal hearing was held in court in New Haven on April 5th, 2011. On next week's show, I'll be interviewing April Gallup herself. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.